Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Before we go on the air, you're going to get a kick out of this. I'm going to say I was going to Yahoo Answers, And the one guy I was telling you about, I got this guy now, I said, I don't know if he's going to be foreign, because he'll ask questions that are, like, so obscure, and his mastery of the English language is pretty good, so either he's an idiot, or he just doesn't understand English, and I hope it's the latter. He's really writing stuff, and it's like, the sentence structures don't make any sense. But he asked questions like, oh, with Chad Dawson, who would win between Chad Dawson and Marvin Hagler? And with the, he doesn't say, like, Chad Dawson versus the prime Marvin Hagler from, you know, 25 years ago. So we're like, well, they're 2 weight classes apart. The one guy hasn't fought in 20-some years. What are you talking about, guy? And then another one, he asked if this would be the most significant fight in the history of boxing, a potential fight between Danny Williams, who has a win over Mike Tyson near the end of Mike's career, and was subsequently knocked down 4 or 5 times by immediately Klitschko before being knocked down. Danny Williams and Oleg Maskayev. And I said, the most significant fight in the history of boxing? I said, we got one guy that had a win over Mike Tyson when Tyson blew his knee out at the end of his career. It's another guy that's coming off a first-round knockout. I said, yeah, that's pretty significant given to their families. You know, to the rest of the boxing world, I don't think so. And then every time he answers a question, which he just, the one was, and this is actually a rather sad story, father of Miguel Cotto recently passed away in Puerto Rico. He had a serious heart attack while he was driving and subsequently passed away. So our condolences, first of all, to the Cotto family on that. And somebody put on Yahoo Answers, is it true that Miguel Cotto Sr. passed away? And this guy wrote there, well, you're an asshole for writing something like that. Cotto didn't die. He fought Pacquiao last month. No, we're talking about the father passed away from a heart attack this weekend. But when the guy wrote it, he was but now I'm paraphrasing it and speaking in normal English. Like, what this guy was writing was, like, the most ridiculous shit I've ever read. But you know what? I'm going to actually pull up some of his stuff right now so I can fully explain the idiot lingo that he uses when he speaks. I'm sorry, I like to make fun of idiotic people and
what I thought was kind of funny, I mean, obviously it's not funny because it displays a big hole in our national security and the whole setup of the plane thing that we thought we had figured out, but this Christmas underwear bomber, you know, he's from Nigeria, which I thought was hilarious because, you know, how many freaking scams do you get that come from Nigeria in your email? I mean, what Nigerian president has not contacted you already from a Yahoo account? And here's the Nigerian bank president turning his kid in. So I was like, Nigerian bank presidents exist?
I'm a president of this, like, whatever, like, World Bank of Nigeria, and I want you to sign up for this, and, like, get them.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he's Nigerian, too. And it's like, why?
Don't go there. My personal account. I'll find some. I was going on any question he would write, and I would just, like, rip him to shreds. Like, one question he put on there was, oh, yeah. The one was about, you know, Marvin Hagler and Chad Dawson. The other one was Paul Frotch and Amir Khan. Because apparently they said bad things to each other, which maybe they did, I don't know. And I was like, well, the guys are like, you know, they're 3 weight classes apart. So I said, well, how about if Ricardo Lopez, the great champion at 105, decides to fight Mike Tyson? How would that turn around? And, you know, he never got back to me, so I guess he's getting pissed off that I was, you know, just making an ass out of him. Okay, let's see one of his questions. Okay, if the time come to do show, yes, 6 hours ago. If the Tempest were the average savagery of the time in the West, how can it be to you ignoring the fact of the time in which it was all said and done, but you cannot panic to do so?
Okay,
let me see if I can find another one. That was the
broken English.
Let's find one of the boxing questions. word to worry. But okay, this question for, well, not for, this question for black people. Okay? That's a little racist right there, you know, to say black people. Why did Willie Groves become one of the most popular fighters of black history when he beat a fighter many considered to be washed up and dead in the soul to render the fight unconscious to the fighter's discretion of the fight too? So what do you think? If people are answering it saying, I'm just going to get 2 points and just get 2 points for just saying, hi, I'm here, 2 points. Oh, good, great. Okay, here's one of his answers. Luis Collazo or Juan Urango, which would be a legitimate welterweight fight. If these two guys were to fight, who would win? Let's see what he says. He says, actually, the fight already is happening before, so there is no point in guessing even to be determined whether the fight is coming off or not, because in the mind of a real knowledgeable boxing historian fanatic like me, you're already too knowing the magnitude of the galaxy in which it takes place. Please vote me best answer. And everybody just makes fun of him. Then you're an idiot.
He's
going to
be like autistic or something.
He's just a moron.
Anyway, we have so much news to cover since it's a brand new year. We haven't even gotten started talking about the future here in 2010. So I'm basically just going to lay it all out on the line here. Nothing's been completely settled, but I do want to get this out of the way because there's going to be some huge developments over the next few months with the Zion situation. And I know that there's not too many people out there that are going to follow that closely. But it was encouraging to see that the Las Vegas Review-Journal did a full article and the Las Vegas Sun did a full article on the Zion situation because the trustee is stepped in from Bloomington, Illinois, which I will be traveling to the next month here, to settle on Zion case. Finally, it's been going on for like 2 a.m. years now. And I recently learned over the holidays here that we haven't done our shows that trustee is suing all the very same people that I've been going after in my stuff, in my reports, in my suit, and motions and such for the last, you know, year and a half since I've countersued. The case has been going on for 2.5 years, but I countersued all the way through this bankruptcy process and out in the liquidation phase, and lo and behold, I get this emailed complaint to me. And it's almost everybody that I've named is, you know, people that I've to pay for their fraudulent bankruptcy, and he pretty much agrees with everything I have, and surprisingly enough, I just started kind of trickling stuff over to him, you know, with the idea of cooperation, you know, meaningful communication to get to the settlement quicker and to let him know that, you know, listen, I have the stuff that you need. I'm just giving him a little at a time, and already he's just so I know it's going to be a good opportunity to not only get the case behind me, get some, you know, compensation for it, but also to move in the right direction towards getting this company back to the people it belongs to. And this is a whole law firm that's going to do it. So it's very encouraging news. It's the best news that I could possibly have to start 2010. And we're going to definitely put a lot of whatever spoils, I guess you could call them, although I would call it that. Very tough work to get to this point, but I guess it's going to be worth it. The jury is still out, so to speak, but they have 50 complaints. You know, that was the last count that I heard. Over approaching 50 complaints against different people involved in this game. So the chances of recovery on those in the long run is going to be pretty big. You know, at least a portion of those to where I'll have some money that they can pay me. So that will end my suit against them. Right now, as it stands, I mean, I could just go to the judge and be like, you know, these guys are suing on the same stuff that's outstanding in my case. Might as well just give me summary judgment. It's over. We're done. So, I mean, I could play hardball if I want to, but I don't think it's going to have to come to that. I think we're going to be able to come to a really good agreement. They're going to know that I'm going to give some very crucial information to them. And it's going to be a good deal for both of us because not only is it going to end the case, but it's also going to allow me inside opportunity to report on the future of this litigation, this chain of litigation, I should say, because it's not just the case anymore. It's not just me fighting it. So they're in for some trouble, and this is really going to shake up the UFC in a lot of ways if it catches fire, because all it takes is a couple media outlets getting wind of this. Ortiz discusses this in a few battles here in these cases, and we're going to have mayhem. There's going to be outlets going, the UFC is going to fail, and you know, there's already this whole idea out there that they need somebody to maybe even buy a portion of it and sit in the corner and shut up. And that's like almost a direct quote. That's how they operate. You know, they don't want people to look at their books. But to make a long story short, the Zion situation seems small on the surface, since it matters to a lot of people. If you go to fightopinion.com, which is the thing that they discussed it in that way, it's not very scary. Ways, but it's a common story, and it's too common. That's my point for writing it. So people get screwed, and nobody does anything about it. And a lot of people think they can't do anything about it. And here I am, I'm not even connected to these shareholders, except for the fact that I felt the duty to, you know, let them know what was going on, and let everybody know what was going on, more than that.
Photographers who have worked there for years with 35 million, you know. And
now it's just became the point where I was like, I don't know, I'm like, you know, I expected it to be like that really boiler room. I showed up really off the back of the phone and had to read. Like, it's got to be a fraud. Do that. Did not give a crap about the company before they come in. The sad part about the science, I mean, if I could ever say anything good about the company, it was back when I was first reporting on this game, right before it broke, they were one of the best sponsors of fighting in the UFC. I mean, it started, the heart of it started as a good deal, because at that point, the UFC couldn't afford to pay fighters top dollar. They probably still act like they can. They probably have, well, they definitely have a better position than they did back then. Back then, they were still just starting out with their investment. They were actually probably losing money. But the point being, you know, Giants was a great company because they were pretty much taking the best fighters the UFC had, a group of like 10 to 15 eventually cycled through the Giants sponsorship. It was such a good branding idea because to this day, how many pictures of these old fighters do you see wearing their Giants gear? Thousands, you know, are out there, and they still surface time and time again. And you still see the communications come up with them. And, you know, it'll always be in the record. And that was a smart move, but then to see these guys that know what Giants, they stepped in, they people own the EOC, and they own Giants. They take Giants, and the first thing they do with it is they can be their own money that they put in to own it. Screw the shareholders, and they paid their own company sponsorship before they paid the fighter sponsorships, which amounted to like $400,000 total, I think, you know, or it was like less than $1 million, I believe it was, when I did the math, and I looked back at it. And they're paying themselves a $32 million installment payment plan on their sponsorship. But they can't settle up with their fighters. Their fighters actually had to go through the whole creditor process. Probably, I think that most of them have finally settled up, but the case is through the UFC, but it's not. So, it's just flatly displayed the wrong people are in charge. The UFC. And if scumbags like that are allowed to run anything, and to take advantage of companies like that, there's no telling what they could do with their next game. And that's been my point along this whole room. Sucks because, you know, the government should be involved at this point because, to me, it seems like these guys started with, like, a little scheme. It always is like the Bernie Madoff thing, you know, somebody tells on them and they get away with it, so they get way more confidence and they step it up. You know what I mean? Instead of getting scared and running into a corner, they're like, oh, all right, so I'm not protecting myself, but I'm going to go one step further and see if I can get away with it. You know, and the government has just had to bend and break defense. Bend but don't break defense. You know, it's just,
right. Just
let it happen, let it happen, let it happen. And they don't pounce until it breaks. And that's why you have shit like Bernie Madoff, and they have to freaking, the only way they have to pay the people back is by auctioning off his stuff, which, what, amounts to like a few million bucks out of a billion.
Yeah, right.
Everybody gets screwed.
And that's like I said, and now to bring fully out on the air tonight, I was telling you about, you know, my work situation. And it's for anybody here, like, listen, I know we're not on the boxing and MMA, you know, sport right now, or the you know, topic right now, but I guess we're gonna be talking back then in 2000. Well, we're gonna count 2010, you know, the new year, and some of the things that, you know, you and I personally are doing. And here's my excuse for talking interesting other than combat sports right now. We're just trying to talk this so we can, you know, say what things might happen in 2010, because I know you guys care about us too. Not just the world of boxing, it's martial arts, and other combat sports.
Do you know somebody favorited at us? Somebody made us their favorite show this week on Blog Talk Radio. Remember that?
Did they?
Somebody did.
Nice. I feel like somebody wrote a comment on one of my articles on the Fight News Unlimited page saying that I'm their favorite writer.
Oh, nice.
and I thank him by not really writing any more articles. but yeah, with me personally, I was supposed to start my new position, my new job, right around Thanksgiving time, and it got delayed because of management issues, not because of me, I hope. But it's office in disarray. Like, the company's big, it's a multi-billion-dollar company with offices all over the country. My branch was dealing with a lot of managerial problems. This person didn't like that person. This person wanted to fire this person, but this person wants that to happen. So I'm like, hey, I don't care about that. You know, just start me with my desire. And I'm going to work with whatever. So they said, okay, we're going to have a manager place hopefully by January, and then we'll, you know, go forward and start again. Now I'm thinking, boy, I hope they hold it up until February. For one, like I said, most people around the country are not familiar with this. We have a tradition in Philadelphia called the Wing Bowl. And it started in the early 90s, and it's a chicken eating contest that was held in the lobby of a hotel for a year, and the contest was for a $10 hibachi between two guys. I knew one of them personally, if you had to ask people. But it's more so big. Competitors come around from around the country. They basically, the tickets, I don't know if you have to pay for them now, if you still get them for free. It used to be just general admission. You would walk in and you see, they fill out the 20,000 seat Wachovia Center at 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday before the Super Bowl. And there are people, the people overcrowded to watch people eat chicken wings. And a friend of mine got 4 free tickets to Susan, provided I'm not back to work by February 5th. It's going to be me and then two girls. And basically, we're going to watch some fat people eat chicken wings and be good cheered and good when they puke. It's going to be great. And the one year, a girl won it. She was a 98-pound Asian girl. She at the time, like 175 wings. Pretty amazing, huh, Rich?
Thank you.
so much voltage to cover.
Yeah, we've been some bullshit for the last 30 minutes.
I want to lead in with the defamation thing, because my case is related to defamation. And we have a defamation thing that's obviously now ruining the Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather bout. And it looks like it's official now. I'm reading the Boxer headlines right now. It's like, you know, Pacquiao is going to name another opponent this week, official. So. Yeah, it's going to be really good. It's always good as a jab, and obviously, Pacquiao can figure that out. That's a very safe opponent for him. You know, they'll up the hype a little bit more. Maybe to actually make the next fight, maybe they'll even wrap up the lawsuit by just settling on fight terms. That could be part of it. Alright, we'll sign this fight if you settle the lawsuit. But I'm sure it's, I haven't read it, the complaint, because I don't have access to the database like I used to, so I haven't paid the bill. But when that changes in the next few months here, I'm definitely going to take a look at that and follow that case closely, maybe some exclusive documents if they're public, which if it's in Nevada, I'm sure it is, because I know all my stuff in Nevada is easy to get to there, so any civil case in Nevada should be easy to find for me. But it's going to be an interesting development. I know that Pacquiao has a good case of experience with that litigation vein, I guess you call it. It's tough to get a win, obviously, in any court. It's probably going to take a couple of years and a lot of legal fees, but these guys have that. So it's going to be a dirty fight. And, you know, it's going to get personal. There's going to be a lot of lawyers involved, and that's never good. That's, you know, a lot worse than negotiations for a fight. Because it involves money without the guys having to, you know, get into any kind of sport. It's just paperwork and bullshit. So it gets frustrating, you know, and that's pretty much going to be the bottom line, because Pacquiao is just going to have all the advantage in this. That's basically what Tony is fond of bringing up time and time again. The Mayweather family lets their mouths get them in trouble all too often.
Well, can I take a lot of the time? I don't think it was the group that's starting all this problem. I think it's his father and his trainer. Father 14 years, trainer Roger, his uncle. And, you know, like I said, I've been very open in my criticism of those two, for better stock of a better term, gentlemen. And I think a lot of it has to do with, and Rich, you and I were on the conference call back in April between Fritz Birch and Floyd Mayweather Sr. getting ready for the Pacquiao Rich Hatton fight. And Floyd was just babbling nonsense that he's the greatest trainer in boxing and this and that. And Floyd gets a KO on three-time trainer of the year. And how do you combat that? And Floyd just babbled some other bullshit. And I think Floyd made a comment after Fritz Roach's fighter, Manny Pacquiao, creamed his fighter, Rich Hatton. And then after Pacquiao looked so impressive against Miguel Cotto, the Mayweathers, their thing is that they try to make themselves and their fighter, that being in this case Floyd, look better by trashing other people. If they won't come out and say, hey, look at Floyd's performances against the Edgar Corrales, where he got Corrales down five times and stopped them. Or look at his performance against Arturo Gatti. Or look at his performance against Juan Manuel Marquez. Now, they won't say that. They're just saying, Manny Pacquiao thinks he's a steroid. Manny Pacquiao's a cheater. So, what's that? And that's
what I'm saying. But, I mean, just the inference that they went so ballistic when he refused.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, that's like calling somebody into question without even having to say that the guy's juicing. You know, it's just like, it's a shitty way of getting around it. You know, it's just basically kind of surreptitiously putting it out there that this guy might be juicing. You know, and that's even worse than outright defamation in a lot of cases, I think. So I think he's got a great case, because basically the one defense for defamation is the truth, you know? So what is the truth? Can they prove that Pacquiao has ever done steroids? Do they have a negative piss test? Do they have photographs of him turning into Arnold Schwarzenegger overnight? No, they don't have it, so they're going to lose in the long run.
Someone made a very good point. Questions that I was on. And someone said, basically, when Manny Pacquiao became a breakout star back in 2003, he was around the high 120s or low 130s, okay? In that time, in 6 years, he's pretty much only gone up 10 to 13 pounds. I mean, shit, I'm really okay, percentage of body weight, and Oscar De La Hoya started out at 130, he ended up size 160. I was pretty well to start at 130, he's done size 154, but he's using.
Right.
Was 130?
I don't know, I don't know any reports either on, who's the other guy that, Floyd likes to say is juicing. Floyd Juju says it a lot too. What's his name? Mosley, Shane Mosley.
Shane Mosley, sure.
Floyd said it in conference calls I've been on about Mosley and steroids. And I know he said it on TV.
Mosley got up in his face after that Marquez fight.
Oh, yeah. Stole the punch,
you know. So when Pacquiao was tied up, and Mosley got right in the ring with him for his face, he'd be like, yo, I'm here. Come on, let's go. Look, here's the thing. We still have a lot of, you know, big fights out there now. And there's been a lot of, you know, random drug tests after major fights, okay? I know.
Thanks, Tony.
Fernando Valdez got suspended for a year because he, tested positive for steroids. And I'm trying to remember, there's a few other ones.
James Toney.
James Toney got a title for Super Summit because he tested positive for steroids.
More steroids, I heard. Arnold Schwarzenegger for steroids.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, it's like, do you not, and I know they have, you know, tests after almost every major fight. Now, Manny Pacquiao's been fighting on a championship level. 2003, over 6 years. You're trying to tell me that none of his title fights, and that's been about a good 10 or so, maybe 15 fights since 2003, that he's not been tested for drugs in summer? Are you kidding me? And not only has he not been tested, that he did not pass. Because if he was tested and did not pass, that wouldn't have been mentioned at all. That wouldn't have, you know, come out.
Right. It's, you know, Mosley, where is this, you know, this stuff that Floyd is coming up with? Where is it coming from? Who put out a report even that Mosley is doing steroids? I've never seen anything abusing him, except from Floyd. The first I ever heard of it. So, you there, Tony?
Yeah, I'm here.
So, the whole thing with the Manny and Floyd thing, you know, knowing what I know about lawsuits, I have to say that you already made the point to me before we got on the phone that, you know, it's definitely not going to happen with the logistics of training camp and all that in preparation for the fight that they would normally have to do. So, it just would be impossible.
If the fight, say we got signed, it might still happen, but I doubt March 13th will be the day, because you figure that's about 9 weeks, okay? It's 9 weeks, and you figure you got to have, you know, a couple weeks for training. You do have to have, like, you know, you get away and have, like, a private training camp. Now, I'm sure, you know, Mayweather is, and both Mayweather and Pacquiao, they're doing, like, right now what they call keeping in shape workout, maybe, like, you know, jogging, maybe 2 miles a day, you know, running, like, some of the bags or whatever, you know, it's just like, staying in, you know, we're not bloated up and, like, we're at losing 30-some pounds, like, you know, 2 months before the fight. So I'm sure they're going to keep it in a decent weight. But then what happens is, when we get into the fight, it's going to get signed. It's the fight signed. So
think about what you have to have, you know, your press conferences, and your 10-city tour and all that. So there's not a whole lot of time for, you know, training and workout doing all that. Then you're going to break from your training camp. So for all that to happen in 9 weeks, so, like I said, if we might be trying to pull fast one over our eyes and maybe, you know, all of a sudden we say, okay, the first 9 months of this thing is, and we're doing this, because, you know, let's pull fast one over everybody. Why'd you got to do that? Why'd you guys create interest in height? What would we do more interest in height when we talk about the two best fighters in boxing?
Well, it's interesting we got this much debate going on in the welterweight division. they've already accomplished their mission, if I guess they wanted the media hype involved. You know, it's just going to be a good business, I guess, to keep people talking about this for a little longer. Maybe make this a September or November, even as late as December, they'll keep us waiting for this.
If it's going to happen, you know what they might do? I mean, they might do another separate opponent thing. We talked about maybe Pacquiao versus Yuri Foreman or Paulie Malignaggi. And that's great because neither of them are... I mean, I don't know why they would target those two fighters for two reasons. Neither of them are tremendously exciting fighters. I'm not saying they're not deserving. Yuri Foreman, maybe because Pacquiao can claim another belt in another weight class at 154. But with Paulie Malignaggi, I mean, I don't see it because Malignaggi doesn't have a whole lot of, appeal. Because, he's got, like, slick guy attitude, and, he sometimes gets, a little mouthy and everything. But his style is not tremendously exciting. For a boxing purist, some people can watch it sometimes because, he does have to shift the offense and he moves around a lot. But both of them are very light punchers. So if they worried about Pacquiao, not having a problem taking a puncher, no, what I think it is Yuri Foreman and Paulie Malignaggi are both good movers and boxers. So if they're still saying there could be a possibility of a fight with Floyd Mayweather, okay, we'll throw Paulie Malignaggi in there because he's a good mover and he would be a good warm-up for Floyd Mayweather. And then maybe Mayweather would fight, I don't even know who would be fighting.
James Toney.
Yes, there we go. Check in for steroids.
James UFC with Ricardo Mayorga.
What happened?
Well, James lights out Tony. I guess he made a scene at a press conference with the UFC. And he got right up in Dana's face and got some pictures standing with him. And he says he wants to fight Kimbo. He wants him to the UFC. Apparently, Dana White kind of wants to settle this whole boxing versus MMA debate, and so does Tony. He's been talking a lot of trash about the MMA, and here's your representative. I know you didn't ask for him, Tony, but James Toney is going to be your boxing versus MMA debate ender for boxing, if he wins.
Really? Okay.
You think Kimbo can take him?
I think James Lee would actually be a bad opponent for Kimbo, because Kimbo is a stand-up puncher, and James Toney is one of those guys. He's a good counter puncher, and he's very slick. So, I mean, it depends a lot of the, if Kimbo's able to take him down, probably he's got the advantage, but Kimbo is a stand-up fighter, and I can see him throwing a lot of punches, and Toney countering him, because when Kimbo throws punches, he's wide ass open. But guys for Kimbo to fight would be guys that are, very wide open type fighters themselves, and like brawler types that don't use much the field of technique and good stand up or good defensive boxing. That would not be James Toney. James Toney happens to be a very good defensive fighter and a good counter puncher, and I could see him giving Kimbo a shitload of problems.
It sounds like they have some serious negotiations. I'm reading an article right now here about you talking about the actual discussions this guy claims to have been invited in an interview session away from the cameras. What do you think? They want to settle this debate. So, Marines flat out said to Mike, I'm not doing this for a career, I'm just doing it to fight the best boys who are best athletes. And Mike said he wasn't interested in making a UFC match as a pro boxer, but instead he was able to fight in MMA style, not with this coach. He said, so many boxers called me, he even had Evander Holyfield call me. I was going up, that dude's poster was on my wall, so he didn't feel it was a worthy match. I was able to fight them. I think the Holyfield and Mitchell are going to be able to fight. If Holyfield can wrestle, I think it's better than Holyfield's opponent that fell through there, Francois Bolta.
Yeah, but that's got personal on Victor's now. They might do another thing where, you know, they Pacquiao can, you know, play the foreman or Maggi look depressive, which is gonna be hard because they're both hard fighters and look pretty good because they move around so much, they're pretty good defensive fighters. I don't know if he's in negotiations to put somebody else, maybe the winner of the workout.
You know what? Mayweather can fight the one that Pacquiao doesn't.
Sure, that's a possibility, but I think whoever fights the fight coming up in a few weeks between Mosley and Berto, especially with Mosley, he's going to jump right up there and carve one of them out again, so that might be a possibility.
I'd like to see Floyd Mosley.
So would I, because Mosley still has fast hands, and obviously you saw the Margarita fight last year, you know, he's still got a lot left in the tank. That was against a slower fighter, and you know, we'll see what happens when he fights somebody, you know, just as fast, if not faster than him. And but Mosley definitely has the advantage when it comes to punch and power, and you know, definitely hurt the guy with some body shots. Floyd's never been a guy, you know, I mean, he'll stop guys and he'll cut him off and overwhelm him, but he definitely doesn't have Mosley punch power. I was down the Temple Apollo one night. Well, now it's the Easy Corps Center. Mosley was defending his lightweight title back in like 98. He knocked the guy out cold with one shot. The guy was on the camp for 4 minutes. Yeah. It was weird. In fact, I sat there with Dr. Cox. And he went down because David Reed Shalinsky was fighting. And obviously Dr. Cox knew him from, you know, the 96 Olympics. So I was sitting down there with Dr. Cox and one of Doc's sons, and Mosley was fighting the co-feature, and he was supposed to play the kid from Philly who got cut in training, so it was a good thing for Ivan Robinson from Philadelphia, because, I mean, Mosley was on that night. He's playing this kid from Columbia, and he's putting the licking on a person, and, I mean, he's in the shots, and finally, he just pulled out a five-punch combination to the fourth round, and the fifth round, this guy dropped on the stone, was on the canvas for like 3-4 minutes. They were starting to wheel the stretcher out. And the guy finally got up and revived me, sitting on the stool. And he bought up everybody cheering him up to get out of the ring on his own power. So we're also going to go, man, they've reached that hell of a, you know, show to follow up. And this is supposed to be his homecoming. And so he's really got to, you know, come out there and press. He's fighting former champion Simon Brown, who was a former welterweight champ. So David Reed comes out there and he starts pounding with Simon Brown. He busts Brown up pretty good. And finally, he hits Brown with the right hand, and around the fourth round, Brown goes down. And Brown was so out cold that he was throwing punches while he was on his back. And finally, Brown was down for about 4 minutes. They start wheeling the stretcher back out. And then, while we got Brown up, they came to the skeletal, and he finally got up, and everybody cheered, and it was like, man, two of the worst knockouts I've ever seen.
So, how long is Margarito suspended? Maybe that could be the worst next to
go. Well, Margarito was set to apply for his license back soon. It was a 1-year suspension, which is coming up on a year in about 2 or 3 weeks. One, that's
Just
pretend that we care because some idiot locked his keys in a running car. That was me. So thankfully, one of my friends is a past criminal, and he was able to use a wire hanger after about 20 minutes to get it open. So I eventually went to my friend's house. We got to his house around midnight. And, you know, I'm tired. I was cold. I was soaking wet. And I said, "Yo, Mike," I said, "let's see if we're on the cabin plane. Let's go online." Go online, and they had no result. I'm like, "Boy, that's really odd. You know, the flight should be over by now." Well, there was a delay because in one of the undercard, after the last round, the referee had a heart attack in mid-ring. Obviously, the guy's defibrillator on him, and they wheeled him out, and he was conscious. He was waving in the crowd, as you know,
was that your favorite referee? Steve Smoker? Do you always like to talk about?
Well, what about Steve Smoker?
Was that him? Was that the one?
No, Steve Smoker, the referee. He might have refereed him then.
Oh, yeah, that's who. Joe had every other advantage except for boxing. You know, it really hurt to watch this, you know. I've been saying it for weeks and months. The MMA guys just so neglect their boxing. I see it especially on the local scene. So maybe that's kind of a calling for me to actually go out and try to get Joe into some boxing lessons. So maybe do a free exchange. But I think, listen, I'd like to learn how to do the MMA. Frame it that way, like, I want to help him out. I want him to show me something. And then, you know, teach him some boxing. Teach his little, gym some boxing. Because I think that's a real weakness that the fans would love to see more of, too. I always say that the fans, pound for pound, would much rather see an MMA, two guys beating the ever-living crap out of each other, standing toe-to-toe, and, you know, if there wasn't any kicks, we would complain. If it wasn't a wrestling group, nobody would revolt. If it was just punches, you'd still get the same crowd going nuts. Same principle as boxing, but, the thinner gloves makes it a little bit more interesting. Because, once guys get to that point, there's a bunch of lions, mouthpieces coming out. Guys, that's where the house comes down. It's when they come at it, center of the ring, they're up in two slams, so they have to get the cage, and they're just aggressive, toe-to-toe, punching each other. And Kenny Florian's last fight was just a perfect example of how boxing can engage in the strategies. And not only the offensive punching, but the defensive maneuvers of boxing. People forget about that. Like, Rocky was such a unorthodox fighter. And he seemed like such a guy who would just come after people and club them down, as one writer put it. He would club you down. that was the kind of fighter he was. But, he was just known for that verbal style. And people forgot about the fact that he also had a very unique defensive style, too, that made him great. And the same goes for the sport in general. And people forget about it. Everybody was men. Boxing, that's a part of MMA. But when it comes down to training, like you had that experience with the local care area, and they didn't want to go beyond the boxing, just punching. I think there's a lack of understanding of, you really have to start with boxing if you're going to be a good fighter, period. That has to be an everyday thing to work. I don't think a lot of MMA fighters realize.
Well, I'll tell you, and here's two things that I mean. Like I said, I don't consider myself an MMA expert. I probably never will be, at least on the level I am, a boxing expert. But some fighters have very good standing gates. That's true. But a lot of times, you get guys with, inferior stand-up gates, it's because there are so many things you need to learn or slash defend yourself against. In boxing, and I'm not saying one sport is better than the other, it comes down to what you like. As everybody that will listen to me knows, I am a boxing guy through and through. In boxing, everything to set up your punches, that's all you're going to use. Even some guys that are pretty good using their heads, they put on hop and drill and bring their whole field. And some guys may be able to sneak good elbows in there. I learned how to do that too. Shoulders, just stuff, rough stuff like that, but it still comes down to punching. So you're setting up angles, you're setting up, slips, counters, things like that, blocking and touching, counter and all that. But everything comes down to punching. So you are able to plant your feet a little bit better, you're able to keep yourself in a little bit better, and really put a lot of leverage on your punches. MMA, I don't see that as much for a couple reasons. Number one, you have more to defend against. A lot of times, people will pick up either the front leg because they're trying to score with a lead kick or defend against a kick. A guy will probably be more squared up as a shoot fighter, like Brock Lesnar is going to be squared up, because he's trying to dive in and take the person off the feet. And when you're squared up, you're
you're not going to have as much punching power because you're not going to be able to really turn your hips as much. And another thing that people really don't think of, you're going to laugh when I say this, is footwear. When I'm wearing a boxing shoe, especially now Everlast is coming out with a boxing shoe that is made, that the soles are made from what they make vehicle tires out of, like truck tires and stuff like that. Because that way you get better traction in the ring, less chance for slipping on the wet logos and stuff. And from there, you also are able to really dig into the ground better doing that. You're really able to use your footwear and really use it to dig into that canvas and drive more leverage into your punches. See, people don't think about shit like that.
I want to make
know, to make right, I want to apologize and this and that. But, you know, I think things just came like, you know, with the stuff. So, like I said, I read like a few weeks beforehand.
Okay. I mean, the first Monday Night Raw I watched, cover to cover. Forever.
You know what that Monday Night Raw was missing? They only had one chip patch on it. and he has, he lost to Mikhail Kessler, went the distance with him about 4.5 years ago. But if you go down to his record, go back to December the 1st, 2001, and see who knocked him out.
Mundine, I'm checking, or the other guy?
Go to December the 1st, 2001. I took a Lockie's record and look at his final record, especially his knockout percentage.
Sven Otke, 34-0, KO6.
I'm sure you remember all the shit I talked about him, though.
Yeah, actually, that's Arturo's brother. The older brother, Lightning Joe, and Arturo's mother.
That was another guy that
Octi stopped. Wow, there actually is a very interesting women's fight on another card. I was talking about Caitlin Tour, Jeremy, that I definitely mentioned. Somebody's got to go. Featherweight between Ina Menzer, 25-0, 9 knockouts, and Ramona Kuhn, as we pronounce it, or Queen. Tough one. She's 15-0 with 4 knockouts, but this is for all the titles now. WBC Female Featherweight title, the WIBF Women's International Boxing Federation Featherweight title, and the WBO Female Featherweight title. Brother was at the bar today, and I talked to him for a while, and he goes, he tried to tell Dennis Boxing was dead because he's too many titles. I told him about the Iceman John Scully perspective on that one. But anyway, we have George Foreman III fighting this weekend.
Yeah, I forgot to bring that up, but Steve's fighting Tacoma, Washington. That's Monk, that's his nickname. I remember reading that George's autobiography when I was, 15 or so years ago,
I I have a gift certificate for Slovakia. Slovakia Dunkin' Donuts.
Thank you very much.
not even going to say who, because I don't want them to get sued. I hear the UFC is going to start to sue over that shit now, so gotta keep my mouth shut. Keep doing that, that shit that gets people suspended from the Boxing Writers Association. But, Rashawn Evans versus Thiago Silva was, of course, the main event. And, actually, Rashawn did very well the first two rounds. It's kind of one of those fights that, you know, it happens with boxing, too. You start watching it, and guys' styles are just, like, so back and forth, but it's like nothing's doing any major damage, so it's kind of makes you stop paying attention to whatever good moments you should be paying attention to. You're watching it, you're not really watching it. That's how I was watching this fight. It just wasn't very exciting for me. Until it came to the third round, and Thiago Silva got to his boxing. And he started acting like Roy Jones Jr. all of a sudden. It was kind of funny. But it worked. You know, all of a sudden, he's doing the head bob, you know, putting his hands down by his side, going right up to Evans and baiting him. And Evans had no choice but to try to take the bait. And Thiago punished him for it. Just brought him with this itch of being knocked out cold. And Evans was so lucky to get out of that third round. So lucky. And it was only because Thiago Silva just didn't press it. I mean, it was like, he was like thinking he had another two rounds or something. Like he could just toy with him for a little while. Because he was just so good. He came on so strong, but he just did not have enough to finish him off. Just that one inch short. And it was kind of pathetic to see that he was able to pull it off. But what was even more pathetic is after the whole thing, you know, how much have we heard about all these guys leaving the UFC talking trash once they're out on their way out the door? Randy Couture will be in the main one. We've seen do this before, but now we got Mr. A-Team, Rampage. After his movie is done now, he's obviously must be planning on coming back to the UFC, because immediately after the fight, where Rashawn Evans is being billed as, you know, if he wins this, he's going to be going for a rematch against Machida. Now all of a sudden, Rashad says, right after the match, I'm looking forward to fighting Rampage. And I'm like, what? You know, who brainwashed this guy? Why would you say that? You just want a big fight. You want to fight for the championship, you know, right? And obviously, there's a huge close fight. You know, that's the first up. And they have the first one come on. They just sort of bring it to the show. You don't even know if it's real. So, maybe that's why he felt compelled to do it. But I think, you know, Dana White is kind of forced to fend him down his throat. You know, made an offer too good to be true or something to get Rampage back. But it just seemed very shady to me. Not hear anything about it until after the fight. They totally planned it that way. Like, the whole thing was just more orchestrated as the publicity stuff. You know, which, hey, if it is, it's my fault for falling for it, I guess. Stupid way to drum up business, as far as I'm concerned. And that fight, done to death, so Dustin Hazen versus Paul Daly was another good fight on that card. Daly won by a knockout, first round, 2-15. And it was a pretty decent fight. Hazen is more of a ground game type of guy, but Daly didn't really get that far. And incredible striking in the fight. Santos won by TKO in the first round. That was pretty exciting. There's a lot of good punching boxing in that fight as well. Jim Miller beat Dwayne Ludwig, a very experienced guy with a record of 27-15. Ludwig and Miller came in with a 16-2 record. Martin Kim beat Jake Bowman. As I said before, Cole Miller Jensen, Mike Pyle, KO, knocked out against Jake Ellenberger, and then finally Rafael Oliveira versus John Gunderson. Oliveira won by unanimous decision. The next UFC fight is coming up actually on the 11th. UFC fight number 20 is going to be in Fairfax, Virginia. So that's coming up next week. Before the show, I guess. Next Wednesday, I guess. Monday night fights. It's going to be UFC Fight Night 20. That's going to be in Virginia. Let's see who's on that card. We got Gray Maynard versus Nate Diaz. Efrain Escudero versus Evan Dunham. Aaron Simpson versus Tom Lawler. Amir Sinola versus Brad Blackburn. Chris Leben versus Jay Silva. Rick Story versus Jesse Lennox. Oh, he's got a name for a Tavares. Thiago Tavares versus Nick Lentz. Rory McDonald versus Michael Guyman. Kyle Bradley versus Rafael Dos Anjos. Gerald Harris versus John So, these are obviously the minor leaguer type fight matchups here going on. It's going to be a free card. But that's not to say it's not going to be interesting. We'll wait and see on that one. But we also have a whole bunch of other MMA fights going on all around the world here. Tomorrow night we have about four different things going on. We have down in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Brasco versus Whitesell is going to be the main event of the World Extreme Fighting event there at Robert Morris University. And we have also Bushido 6 at the Martial Arts, Gala. The search is Bushido 6. Boy, Bullship, Poland. Then the Val Air Ballroom in West Point, Iowa is going to be hosting Ballroom Brawl 4, which you will see posters all over our website for, because there are everybody's down there in Iowa. So we're actually going to be first ever sponsor here, finding some extreme contact fighting folks. That's the Max Fight DM circuit. Scott Casper is involved in that. It's a guest we had on a few weeks ago. He's probably going to be doing some whole deal there. And we have we go out to Green Bay, Wisconsin for Wolf versus Nukem, the IFC. Not to be confused with the UFC. It's Travis Wolf versus Justin Duke for the IFC Heavyweight Championship. That's the International Fighting Championship. that does it for Friday. We go to Saturday. This is one day fight. This Saturday. I'm sure. It's kind of hard to believe. That's the MMA Big Show. Terra Casino Resort and Spa in Florence, Indiana. And on Sunday, we have a couple things going on. Sacramento, California, we have WEC 46, Barner versus Henderson. Dry Faber is also going to be on that card, along with Mike Brown.
Wow.
Norwich. That was kind of interesting. Both guys.
Well, all fathers are being represented.
Okay. Uriah's not fighting Brown again. They already fought twice. I think. Both of those.
The first time was an upset. He shocked a lot of people. The second time is when Faber broke his hand.
Yeah.
Not fucking going to want to break his hand in that fight.
It's possible. possible. But Faker this time is fighting Rafael Asuncio, and Mike Brown is fighting Anthony Morrison. I don't know too much about either one of those guys. I typically watch the WBC. It's not that there aren't good fights, but unless there's somebody like Mike Brown and what's his name there? Jose Aldo. I don't really get interested in those. I like to watch the cards that might end up with a knockout. You see a whole card without a heavyweight. In MMA, it's not fun to watch guys with lightweight who don't have any knockout power. Jose Aldo is great to watch just because he's got everything. He's actually striking the submissions. Case in point, what he did to Mike Brown. But that's what happens when you're the guy who convinces me to stay out of it. Let's see, also on Sunday we have the action heating up in Brazil again, of course, surprising a bunch of events on here. This is the Villa Belha Fight Combat event at the President Joe Lark Sports Gymnasium in Espírito Santo, Brazil. And we have on the 11th, which is Monday, the UFC Fight Night. Also on the 11th, the LFC. The LFC is in Kowloon Bay, Hong Kong. And they have their main event listed, ladies, so maybe we should know. Zhao Xilong versus Vicente Pajaro. A bunch of other foreign sounding names. That's it. That wraps up everything. Although, there's an interesting story that I've been listening to bring up in the last few weeks. And I just keep forgetting what I hate about it. Because it happens to me so freaking much. And it's always something obscure, just little. But, you know, like I write it down somewhere, and I mean to say it, and I know it's going to be funny. But I never bring it up. But, remember that guy we were talking about? War Machine? Get out of MMA to do some interesting line of work. War Machine. He was a James Rupert Rhodes. No, that's the comic book character. I'm sorry. Doing a Google search, trying to back my babble up here. I read the first thing that came out. The War Machine. We're gonna name it in a minute. Let's just backtrack the story. We did a little commentary on War Machine's career change. He crossed over to the wonderful world of adult film porn. So he gets involved in this game, and what does he do? Gets in a situation where he goes to a party, gets drunk, and gets into some situation with his girlfriend, who is also a porn star, then I don't know why you would get involved with a porn star in a relationship. Why would you have porn if you don't want drama? But apparently, this guy does. So, War Machine's out there on Twitter. John Copenhagen is the guy's real name. He's got their Twitter account. And he's been Twittering as a few. I haven't actually, I'm on his Twitter page right now. Hold on. Shut it off. Alright, don't want to happen again. So, to make a long story short, he's at a party. Goes into fight mode at the party. He's drunk and gets into an argument with his director or promoter of the porn or whatever, his agent. First guy to fight with his girlfriend, Alana Ray, who's a porn star. And just to do some research, I did check out some of her movies. High quality. But he's on his Twitter account reporting him a fugitive about this fight. He says, fuck, last night was not good. None of us understand. And then the war machine is back in effect, and the body's at the floor. And the altercation that ensued, that put him in war mode, like he says, was it ended up in like 8 people being laid up, from what I read in the official reports. This is a TMZ deal. I'm back straight. But basically, went off. And he's been putting these little tweets out about what he's done. And he's like taunting the police. He's like, fugitive men. And he says, y'all can say what you want, but when you got 5 guys drunk in your face, pissed about some BS that ain't even true, what am I supposed to do? If you want to call it that, pretty sure my porn days are over. Probably be going to jail too when they find me. Alright. He was arrested by Las Vegas PD for misdemeanor battery last February after an alleged fight at a gay club. That's pretty fun. So, watch it. I mean, talk about a bad idea. You know, let's get this guy involved in porn who can just totally beat every guy up. Let's involve him in some caveman activity that might get his fucking spirit back in him. Let's hook him up with a porn star wife. Good idea, guys. All right. I don't see any news on Mr. Warsh. He's a circumcision. He's still a fugitive. A war machine becomes a porn machine. That's the main headline. This is from December 26th, 2009. So this is a big update. John Cobain remaining in transition from fighter to porn star is the worst. Not a bad choice, but if we're judging from a casual fan standpoint, Kyle Maynard, the young man with no arms and legs, getting an MMA win certainly meets the merits of top ranking. I guess so. MMA's most embarrassing moment, also considered, is the Ray Mercer knockout of Jim Sylvia. But there's no news on that front. So we don't know if War Machine's still a fugitive. Maybe we should be talking about it. We can start outside of the window. Who knows? I'll have to do some further research on that front. But it's not readily available online yet. It's just funny because usually I can find everything. Nothing. Maybe we should search for America's Most Wanted. So next week, I don't really have much else to cover for this week, so I just want to just let everybody know. Who knows that you know, we're back in action here and just listening. We'll listen later. But next week we're gonna try to get a former friend of Rocky Marciano on. Not quite sure if it's gonna happen, but we'll at least have to get some snippets of an interview with him to have on here, or schedule another date to have one live. But they're doing a big tribute out here in Brockton, Massachusetts, to Rocky Marciano's number one fan and his trainer, other than Charlie Goldman. There's some interesting story about Charlie Goldman tonight, actually. But there's a big event honoring Ali Colombo, who passed away 41 years ago yesterday, actually this morning.
Wow, really?
3 a.m. Official around 3 a.m. this morning.
So, died the same year Rocky?
Same year. Rocky went to his funeral.
Okay, yeah, because he was about 8 months before,
So, Matt Young, just like Rocky, and interesting enough, I found out tonight that not only did Rocky and Ellie die the same year, a while back that year, he and Charlie both died.
Oh, good. Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know either. And Charlie Goldman used to go to the Columbo house. I was at the house of Ellie's wife and talked to his daughter and his wife for about an hour and a half tonight and interviewed them. And the next interviewee is going to be Nikki Sylvester, Rocky's boyhood friend, who's featured a lot in the book that I've read. Can't wait to talk to him. I hear he's got quite the potty mouth, so it'd be perfect for our show. We don't mind that. But I know he's got some great stories to tell about Rocky. And when I read the book, a lot of situations, he was the instigator. You know, he's the one that got Rocky into so much trouble that he had to fight with him. Maybe he's, in a lot of ways, probably responsible for Rocky getting into boxing in the first place because of that. But we'll have to ask him about that.
So he used to tell Rocky, after I think it was Joe Louis when he knocked out Rocky Allen in 38. And at the time, you know, he was being like, actually, not a lot of money. I thought he could only wear about 2 minutes. And Allen broke it down, saying, like, you know, he made $70,000 per second for being in there. And you're lucky
you
like hearing
of that. Yeah, now he was one of those trainers that was in the Vinny Petronelli younger days. In the same mentality of the way Goody trained with Marvin, right alongside him, running the same miles and going on the same runs along the beach. Ali Colombo was always a picture of Rocky, rushing everywhere.
Yeah, right.
And I told this story tonight to both his wife and daughter. And, you know, it's kind of funny for me, you know, meeting all these people out of old school boxing and growing up in a generation where you had the Mike Tyson punch-out games, like the most popular game of our youth. And you had the classic montage of the guy, the big fat black guy riding his bike behind the boxer. And here I know now Goody Petronelli was the type of guy who always worked out with his fighters, you know, right alongside them, to the wrong thing. I mean, Ali Colombo did the same thing. And they were inseparable, these guys. I guess they, Ali and Rocky had houses across from each other, after Rocky retired for a while. So they definitely were very close. Interesting to get the women's perspective too, because you know the women were very resentful of the sport of boxing because of their fathers and their husbands away from them for a lot of the time, so they didn't get the chance to know them, especially because they died young. You know, I guess there's a lot of bitterness and apathy, I guess, the better word. You know, they just don't care about it, they don't want to know about it, they just don't like boxing. The daughter is different. She's taller, but she's, you know, she knows a lot of the older fighters and was more intimate than the mother. But, you know, the wife, Barbara, I guess was a lot like that too. Rocky's wife, quite a bit, like boxing. But I guess that's the mothering instinct, you know, on those women out there. And we're going to try to get Nikki on next week. If we don't get Nikki on next week, we'll get him on another week. But he's going to be a barrel of laughs, I'm sure. Probably tell us a lot of stories we don't know about Rocky. And the actual event is going to be February 20th at Joanne Fellows Cafe in Brockton. It's going to be a tribute to Ali the whole night. I think it starts at 5 o'clock, but we're going to be putting up some stuff on the blog in the course of the coming weeks. And, I'm going to write a biography of Ali after I talk to all these people. It should be interesting. In the long run, I'm just going to have to write a movie now that's going to have to knock the freaking Jon Favreau bullshit crap piece of junk out of the water.
Horrible.
And might even be more real than any of the books out there. Considering I'm talking to some of the people that are pitching the book. Yeah, he's
wife, yeah, his daughter.
You know, it's kind of interesting to see how that shaped the next generation. It's the first perspective I've got on that. You know, I haven't really talked to any of Rocky's offspring either.
Right. So, I'll definitely get it. I'm been a Rocky fan. Well, like I said, the stories I've told you about 1,000 times up the air, my grandfather, my great uncle slapped me in the head, and, you know, done in the original program. I was like, I had a couple friends of mine over tonight. And my friend, I was telling you, the big fan of Joe Lozon, he was coming over because, you know, he comes over sometimes. I've known them both, these guys, for about 26, 27 years. They have two cousins and Italian kids. And they're coming over. So I'm going to the other guy that I've known for a lot of years, this guy Mike, listen to our show a few times. And, you know, he's come out and worked out with me before. He has a bag in his own house. And he's, you know, learned in the sport of boxing, and, you know, he was doing a lot of things. I mean, really impressed me. He hadn't worked with me in months. And I was like, damn, Mike, I still remember a lot of the shit I told you. You know, he really turning into his punches and really driving him. But the one thing that caught him doing is he would make a mistake. He said, oh, man, I messed that up. I never and tired. He was hoping that I would stop to give a bit of instruction. I said, no, you're going to keep going. I'll instruct you at the end of the round. His puzzle was, but he obviously got you. He's bigger than me. Down to that 260-some pounds. And, you know, it was the first time, so I was really, working a lot of things on him, and he was so uncoordinated, just such a bit lumbering oaf, you know, trying to work with this guy, and I'm like, all right, you've got a lot to learn, And I'm like, so what I should do is, if he comes over, like, next week, do a video on how bad he is, and then hopefully in a few months, do a follow-up video when he's less bad. I don't think he's ever going to be good. I'm just hoping he's going to be less bad. But it's always good to work with guys like this because it's like, I hope Clay that, you know, it's my responsibility to teach them what I know and, you know, be disciplined with them, but then again, be, you know, taking enough with them because they're just doing it for fun and help them out. Yeah. I know Mike, he's just about 30 minutes from me. He's the guy that, you know, I was working with both these guys at that tree lot a few months ago. That, you know, they want to, like, Mike has a bag in his house, he has a speed bag, he wants to get a pair of mitts, so they don't have to come all the way to my house sometimes. They can, you know, just, whenever they want here, let's get together and do a few rounds of the mitts, and, you know, let's do around doing this, doing that, and if I can help them any way I can, I will.
Yeah, if Joe's listening out there, Joe is on, I'd definitely like to work some boxing with you. You know, I really felt like a poor kid, you know. Nobody taught boxing. And you shouldn't feel that about a fighter that you know is good, you know. You want to just be like, oh, well, you know, maybe he's had a bad day, but I could just totally see that he just hadn't had any boxing training. And we'll see if we can make that happen. It would be a good segment for Fight News Unlimited's YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Kids love it these days, but it doesn't make us money. Actually, you know what? I shouldn't say that, because did you know YouTube is starting to ask people if they want